Action Surge.
Oh my god!
Welcome to Action Surge. This is our post show.
First of all, a round of applause for you.
Yeah.
The mass was mapping.
But we got one for rep two. Thanks so much. It was. That went really well. I mean, I enjoyed that so much.
That was, like, again, as someone who's never really played any D&D, that just felt like such a curveball because I was so expecting everything to be serious and it's, like, deep. And I was like, well, where, you know, we had just finished the last episode finding out the gods are dead. So it was like, well, where's
The joy, the
laughter, where's the banter when it's like, oh, Christ, you know, the world's
ending. Turns out it was in a landslide.
Turns out it's Winnie the Pooh dying in a landslide. But it felt right as well.
It did.
Like, it didn't feel like you had to add something in and then it felt juxtaposed to, like, the adventure. Like, it felt like, why would a horrible blight landslide not sort of come down behind us? I was so impressed.
It's like, well, yeah, if the literal world is ending, we should be on the very, very edge of what we're capable of right now. We are being pushed to our limits.
And also symbolic of literally just like feeling like the ground is like coming out from underneath us.
And that we're ants in whatever the hell is going
on.
I think that's the so credit to my, I played D&D at home for a long time. It's the first time I've ever played really in a public setting. The other DM in our group is a friend of mine called Joe, who is brilliant at creating these skill challenges, at doing something which isn't how much damage can I do and can I hit it, where you're encouraged to think laterally. And so whether that's I didn't think you'd firebolt the bear, for example. I thought you would wait till the bear got to you, using bardic inspiration to give advantage on certain things. The rope is a great example of just like that's a perfect example of the rule of cool, because I feel like it probably wouldn't work like that, but it's so much more fun if it is, and it so rewards like silliness in a way that's that's well intentioned. Like, this might be really stupid, but can I try it? It's like, yes. Please try.
What you're gonna do, right? You're panicking and you're running, and you're just like, you haven't really thought about what this rope's gonna do and bring to the table.
No.
You're like, I've got this rope. Take a piece of it.
Yeah, it's instinctive. Like,
I just thought of like climbers. You know, they rope to each other. So if somebody falls, the others can anchor them.
I don't think either of you fell prone very often. You were the only one who passed your. Oh, no, you passed a particular
save. I
think
I went prone once,
I think you went prone once. The great thing for that is, like, what I was trying to do, again, in situations like that, you want to reward everyone for doing, for their different abilities. The trickiest one to reward, frankly,
what's
is Dolly.
What's Chris going to do?
Like, so
don't cheat it.
Like, I can move really fast. He has really good dexterity saves. Kel has really good constitution. You've got really good dex and strength. You've got reasonably decent constitution, I think, haven't you? Or have I made that up?
I got a +2 in constitution.
Yeah. So those lair actions, if you like, that happened, I mean, they're not truly lair actions, but essentially if you're there's this mechanic within D&D where if you're fighting a monster in its lair, there are things that happen on initiative 20 which, you know, that it can do. And also, if you're fighting a certain type of creature, which you'll definitely get to eventually, you have legendary actions. So they have sort of more than one turn per round. The first one is a strength save, then the bear attacks, then it's a constitution save, then the landslide moves, then it was blighted snow, and then it was dex save on the chasm. And I was trying to make sure that as much as possible it was different things. So we had a con save in there. I'd love to have given more wisdom saves and intelligence saves and charisma saves. There's just not really much room for it in situations
like that. Yeah.
Although I did, thank you so much for reminding me to roll d6s, by the way.
Because it turns out Ben's the rules lawyer.
I love it. No, it's really.
I just like making things harder for the group.
I think it's part of the immersion, and I am gonna drop stuff. Like I am gonna drop the ball on certain things. I also say that's another thing that I practiced at home with Sam, who made this incredible DM screen.
Yeah, shout out to Joe and Andy.
A phenomenal carpenter, Sam Flynn, who is a very good friend of mine, a very dear friend of mine, who plays in my home game and who made this incredible thing for us, which essentially our entire set is this gorgeous DM screen. Yeah. But the hardest thing about that is knowing what the distance it should move is. So initially I was like, 200 feet? But actually, if I look back at my stuff, I mean, I won't bore you with it, but essentially at 200 feet, when you would have been there in like three rounds. Yeah. Mm. And actually, the thing I was really pleased about was that the landslide did increase its movement. And that was something that came out of practicing it with Sam. We were like, oh, that would be fun if we had an extra 10 feet of movement that it gained. So there's this sense of this kind of growing thing. So the closer you get to the end, the harder it gets. Mm-hmm. Rather than kind of, you know, like Mario Kart, sometimes you're just in the lead. Mm-hmm. And you're like, unless I get hit
unless
by a billy bullet, you know, then I'm, yeah. kind of fine. I really enjoyed it.
It was amazing. There's a really tricky line to balance between giving the group a challenge but making it still feel possible. And I feel like we were already exhausted anyway. We'd fought and then we were all out of all of our options apart from like one or two things. We'd fought the bloody vine.
You fought
as well.
The vine, yeah. But I think the vine and the wolf that's really screwed are just really important narrative things. Like, the vine only had, like, I think it had, like, 25 HP. Like, it was there to represent, or maybe 35, but it was there to kind of, it existed to be killed, but it existed to show you that, like, it's that the land is hostile.
Mm. You know why I went up to the vine? I went up to the vine because I thought it was the bear. I thought it was the friendly bear trapped in it. So that's why I immediately ran inside.
Oh, really? They said humanoid.
Oh, well, I just thought there was this. I should have listened, probably. but I thought because you'd seeded the bear earlier, I thought we're climbing down the mountain. That's going to be the bear there. So I immediately ran over to it thinking, that's what it's going to be.
You know, Winnie the Pooh is humanoid.
It's humanoid. It's a great point. So it's brother bear.
Rupert the bear wears clothes.
Yogi. There are so many bears. Well, but the bear was really important to me, again, and from a narrative point of view, to be like, I wanted you to see what the blight did. Mm. And I wanted you to see the instant impact of the blight on a creature, which is kind of what has happened to those of you who failed your saves.
Mm-hmm. Are our eyes turning red?
Probably.
Yeah, we still got to deal with that.
I wanted you to see with the wolf that was kind of dragging its own, like it hadn't been attacked. It was just like, you stay in this long enough, you don't get healed, it'll get you. Like 100% it's going to get you. So it was a big story. I mean, it was a huge story episode as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? Like,
a lot learned.
There was so much work put into creating this pantheon of gods that I would not have thought that, they getting killed.
Yeah.
Episode one /2.
We kind of touched on it last time in Action Surge, but that was kind of the challenge that I felt I had in these first. And I didn't know. I had various stopping points for Ep 1. I had the reveal of the body of Aurum, which is where we stopped. That was my first stopping point. Mm-hmm. I had another, which was... So I asked you to roll a perception check when you first went into a room when you were with Parvus Eye, and you rolled really low, and you could have seen the tree. Mm. And that was a potential stopping point. And then... The orbs were a potential stopping point. So I didn't know where, I kind of didn't know where you were going to get to. But it was, what really surprised me was you splitting up. And it was great. I feel like early doors as a party, when everyone is figuring their way, finding their way through player interaction, what's my, you know, like, so we were getting in flavor. So let's take Endelion, for example. We got a flavor of it anyway, but like Endelion is like, kind of dogmatic in that sense. Like, there is a, like, if you're not going to be of use, she seems very pragmatic, she seems extremely decisive, and she's very unafraid, and in a brilliant way, she should have been more afraid, but she wasn't, and we learned so much about her from the fact that she was prepared to look the most powerful human cleric in all of the world and be like, you are lying to me. I see your bullshit. And I love the fact that everyone got those moments where no one else was there. It was like little spotlights being shone. And I felt like we learned so much. Like Doug going to see Theolon, like Kelnis wanting to see Theolon. Mm. You know?
And also speaking Elvish.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. The dragon, I'm going to ask a question, does Dragonborn speak lots of languages? Is that
so essentially, I think what you would all speak is most of you would have your native language. So Tieflings is Infernal, Draconic for Kobold.
Yeah, that we had a chat, didn't we, that we were saying Kobold is maybe...
A dialect. It's a dialect. Yeah. It's a dialect. We decided it's a dialect of regular Draconic. So
it's
a little
rooted
bit like,
in a similar...
Like how... Norwegians and Swedes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, those kind of Scandinavian languages, there's a lot of overlap, but there's not always perfect translation. So you'd probably have, you know, native languages that you were raised with and that you speak as your first language. If you don't already speak Common, you'll have Common, if Common isn't your first language. And then often you can, like, add one to it. And
yeah, so I've got two.
Yeah, so you've got
so
two.
I speak Elvish.
Oh, nice.
And Gnomish.
Yeah, and no, because.
Well, I just thought it sounded funny. If I'm being truthful, I was like, which other one do I pick? And I was like.
But a lot, sometimes that's the fun. And it's kind of my job to make that important somehow. Mm. Like, I really, that's the kind of challenge for me as a DM. It's like, how can I make Gnomish mean something one day?
In fairness, I forgot we have been trying really hard to forget we've got Morgan. But.
he's the best.
I love him. And one day he'll do something.
We've tried
really
every
good.
Everyone loves the comical mess up.
The only reason we kept it is because we have a mini.
I wasn't going to say it, but then he said that, and I was like, oh, yeah.
There's a damn cool mini.
The backers have bought a mini.
honestly. But I think if I'd realised at the time that Morgan was probably going to run after the human cleric, I was halfway like, do I stay and hold the fort in the middle, or do I for shits and giggles follow the gnome? Because at least I can talk to it.
So what did you think you were walking into? Like, what were your expectations at the start of this? We finished the previous episode. Yeah. There was the body of Aurum, and I felt in the action surge after Ep 1, you were already talking like all the gods were dead.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to walk into 9 murder scenes. Like, genuinely, I thought it was going to look like there'd be more like bodies everywhere.
I thought it was going to go either way. It would either be they're all dead or only Aurum was going to be dead. Because I knew that Aurum was the kind of the military leader, the main, almost right hand.
So I can show you this is a
the rest.
This
plan.
Is this is not Eve's world building quality, but my silly little maps. Of the layout of the maps. So where they are is significant. So as you come up here, there's Aurum, Ulin, and Norvar.
They're the fighters.
The three fighters are the closest to the entrance to the palace. And then you have Ristrin and Persephone, who are the gnome and the halfling, who tend to kind of stick together. And then you have Theolon, Ignas. All the way back here, you have Alakash. And themselves, and Alakash and themselves have a kind of history of working together. Ignas and Theolon are just kind of, I guess they're the most, they're the ones where you kind of go, they had to go somewhere. But it's based on Mount Olympus. I just sort of looked at a load of images of not photographs, funny enough. I can't get any photographs of the Greek.
Of Mount Olympus.
They're really grainy.
But you can also see the Loch Ness Monster. So it was an interesting thing to, like, see how you were going to... It's also, like, what felt like a challenge was, how do I describe black blighted landscapes over and over again without it being like, this room's black, that room's black, that room's black.
No, it felt incredibly cinematic the way everything was playing out, especially because everyone was receiving or finding different information.
Yes.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was very, I mean, I'm sure not accidentally, but, you know, it was nice. The pacing felt like very, very, very good.
But Radian has an idea of what happened. I felt like, I felt like I was, like, I don't know, like a detective in that way. I really felt like he was being very detective-y and didn't really care about the people that much. The reason he went after Gronoth was because obviously it was the only person the only individual character who he had a connection with. Mm. But instead it was kind of like surveying what had happened and in what sequence. And I was kind of writing them down and thinking like, okay, so this one was killed purposefully and the rest, am I allowed to say this now?
Of course, you can share a theory.
What I've pieced together is that Theolon was killed intentionally. Because it was clean.
Right? Mm-hmm.
It was clean and it was made an example of. And it was something that I was kind of, I was feeling very bullish. So at the time I was thinking when we came in and spoke to the other gods, the other Antiqua, Radium was going to come back in and tell everyone that Theolon was made an example of. Like it was there. That was the person they all meant to kill. Mm-hmm. And everyone else was...
Resistant, or
there was something savage or brutal about it, as opposed to the cleanliness of the kill. The only one that was genuinely intentional, or it could be representative of the way in which they fought back. Mm. So the other one slept, you know, in their sleep, and then left. And it being, let's say, we're not pointing fingers, but let's say it is themselves. Mm. Let's say it is themselves. It's the themselves probably did it quietly in. And then kind of like carried the body to the place to make an example. Mm. Maybe it was a sacrifice.
I was about to say.
An offering to the wild to say, I've got your traitor. and I just, these are things that I'm piecing together. Sorry if I'm...
More theories on Discord, I'm sure. Yes. Like, no, this is great.
Yeah.
No, but it, I mean, I know, obviously I know, I know.
Yeah.
But I love whether you're right or wrong. This is also really what I want to say is that to me is absolutely accurate role playing for a wizard with really high investigation. Really high intelligence. So to me, like, I don't know how you like describe it to people, but when wisdom and intelligence are the ones which people kind of go, yeah, but hang on, which one's which? And I think wisdom is an understanding of the natural world and it's kind of flourishing and fading. And it's also an ability to understand what makes people you get a vibe. People who've got high wisdom will see, I just got a weird vibe. Whereas
intelligence is almost analytical,
it's quite cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, if we were doing something in a noir setting and it was a murder mystery, then you would be looking at investigation checks. And, you know, forward characters, they can record, they've got great history, they can recall things, they've got great memories. It's almost like that kind of, that brilliant, slightly asocial or slightly peculiar socially, can't always read cues of people because they don't have the wisdom to read cues. And they don't necessarily have the persuasion to kind of tell people, to kind of get people to give up secrets. But they can look at things and go, no, I know how that happened, in quite a dispassionate way. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you're talking about. That feels like that's where Radian's at, is how he's kind of dispassionately going, okay, this... That's interesting.
Yeah. Mm. And everyone was having their own individual journey with everyone. But it was just kind of thinking, okay, what type of magic? When did it happen? Look, what are we going to have to deal with? And then practically saying, this isn't kind of what... I really liked the argument of like us going, what are we going to do next? Because we are so helpless in this.
Yeah.
The thought of like some giant magical tree beyond known existence is unfathomable.
Yeah.
Because there is nothing beyond the
It's discovering a new dimension. It's almost like time travel. It's like, well, hang on, I can't get my... It goes against everything I've ever been told is true.
It's incomprehensible. And so I was thinking, well, maybe Radian's reaction is that, no, this isn't ours. We need to give this to someone else to deal with. And then maybe we just leave it. But I'm interested to see what we all end up doing with the information, where we go, what information we're given, why Grawnoth wants to give us that information.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we haven't even talked about the orbs, like, and the message contained within.
First of all, bloody hell.
Yeah.
Oh, like,
that was incredible.
I'm almost excited to watch that bit back. Yeah. I want to see our faces.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure my face just fell apart. I didn't know what to do. it was like I was stuck on, like, pause.
And then I was like, oh, wait, we have to listen to this. Wait.
Yeah.
Shout out to our amazing production team, like Seb, who I came to and said, I've got this idea. Is this possible? And then Paul, who did all the editing on it. And in fact, I sent across a script, which is a slightly different script, which the Double Jump team recorded themselves doing, so I could hear the effects, which you could...
Could we listen to it now?
Do you want to listen to it?
Can we? Yes.
So this was the original test I got sent through. I think it's this
He's
one.
He's here! My son! My son is here!
We want you. The boy should never have been allowed to live.
I love the Scottish. What I very really considered keeping them.
What have you done?
He died at the hand of he you should never have spared.
You promised peace, you swore it.
You ended the peace when you weakened our blood.
You cannot hide. If they come for us,
The darkest thick, the briar will hold. May you find some peace at the end of all things.
Cut that line, is too much.
It is done.
You broke the oath. Nothing is certain anymore.
Cut that, it's too much.
Should you brave our lands, we will be prepared.
So then we added, so then what you then heard was a kind of a version of that. But yeah, and I just went to Seb, oh, I love it. And Seb was like, I think we you know, there's more stuff we can do.
Yeah.
And that's like been the whole experience here, is just being like, no, we can do even better though.
What's the Peter Serafinovich character who...
Brian
Butterworth.
Brian Butterworth, detective's here.
Here's her.
Croupier. Lord Mayor's croupier.
So, I mean, the raw files of me, like, in my little booth at home, being like, okay, this is this one, and I'm also going to give you some wild whispers. That might be shit. it's incredibly long audio file. But the orbs were like something I had in my head from the very beginning of the world, and I was just going to read it, and then I just thought how much more immersive.
I mean,
it was immersive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you how close I was to touching them. And in my head, I'm going, no, that's such a dumb move. Like, don't say it. And honestly, if you hadn't picked up the cards, I would have been like, well. We're not going to stand here forever.
Yeah.
Just going to try and pick one up.
Yeah, yeah. And it was that thing where I'm kind of, as a DM, you're like, this is so important.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I would have done if you hadn't touched it, but I think I would have done more stuff to encourage you to maybe the whispering gets louder as you leave. But it was like, I kind of see everything up to the orbs as the pre-title sequence.
Mm. Oh, do you know what I mean? Like, came upon the screen.
And then it's like, the shadow will flood, and then reliquia, you know. And like, because you go, that's the purpose. That's the overriding framing device, is that something's happened. Mm. The gods are dead. What the hell happens now?
But I just all the stuff. And the great thing is there is session zero and there's 1.5. 0.5. That's what I thought it was going to be about, like us being in the web, like web stuff.
I was just about to say the audacity to be like, hey guys, so here you are, ragtag bunch, and everything is falling apart everywhere. Fix it now.
Yeah. I thought we'd be doing like, you know, little kill quests or little fetch quests for part of the web. You know what I mean?
There's still time for that. I mean, like, you're agents of the web. You're all paying the time price. Mm-hmm. There's very, unless you decide you want to break free of the entire structure, which comes with a cost, you know, then you're gonna, and you're still agents.
And we ain't even got to that.
Yeah.
All of our deals are.
Yeah.
And what happened to all the clerics on the top of the mountain? They're still there, aren't they?
I was about to say, this thing, are they? Have some of them made it down?
It would depend.
Because we went on.
Yeah.
We came back and argued with them.
But also that thing could have just happened at a different part of the mountain.
Like, yeah, that's true. They could come down a different
way. Could have been literally expelling the mortals. Well, I know they have clerics, don't really count, but.
Yeah,
or did they summon it? No, that was the blight.
Is but one of them, it? But is one of them involved in some nefarious blight-related
food for the Discord?
Yeah. Well, I'd like to say that this definitely isn't a response to that, but I would like to point out that I loved Eye's interaction.
Yeah, that was amazing.
That was lovely.
I didn't know what you were all going to do. I didn't know if you were going to split the party. I didn't know there was like a version of events where. I thought maybe you guys might all stick together and sort of investigate everything and just sort of go around as a little gang and then discover the orbs and be like, oh, we should go in there because no one else seems to be in there. I didn't know whether you... What I didn't want to happen was, 10 NPCs and you going door to door. And the great thing is from like a, their motivation point of view, they're all very powerful, very wise. You know, they've been around a long time, but there is no precedent for this.
So it's easy for them to overlook stuff as
well. Yeah, exactly. Like everything goes out the window. It's very much just everyone's in survival mode. And I'd love to know kind of how your perspective of Parvus or how I's perspective of Parvus shifted during that interaction, because it it felt like progress in a way, but I don't want to
put words in your mouth. It felt like you're right, progress. But also kind of a deeper lack of understanding. So progress in relationship with Parvus, but a regression in terms of understanding, I think, because before it was just that feels uncanny and feels weird to me. And then having an interaction and speaking in a more regular kobold manner, if not speaking kobold, because it just felt unnatural to speak kobold with this being, there was a moment where I was really tempted. And I put it to the side. I was going to cast, what's the exact terminology for my spell? It's a minor illusion of Parvus with slightly more human-esque hands or ears with a bit more elf. Do you know what I mean? Like elements of everything else slightly and kind of as a thing of just like making Parvus look at themselves in that kind of way, in a way that I was like felt abstract, but kind of summed up that feeling of you're not a kobold.
I'm glad you didn't do it, because I'd have to have ruled that minor illusion doesn't allow you to do anything that big, which is such a shame.
Minor illusion.
You can change. You didn't want to create a reflect. You
5 foot cube.
Yes,
and we're 3 foot.
Yeah, but minor illusion is a cantrip, and. What were you? You wanted to create another Parvus that they could look at.
Just
that's a major illusion. I would rule that's like there are certain things. So message is a great example. Message is a cantrip which allows you to talk to one person in their head. Then you get greater versions of spells like that. There's almost like a tier system, like they evolve, and you get things like sending, and you get so they get more powerful as they go up. Firebolt. Flaming sphere fireball is a kind of another example, almost of progression, if you like. And there's minor illusion, and then there is major illusion.
Yes, I think I got a mistaken with major, which is where if it moves, you can make it.
Yeah, like you can. That's where you can like create a guard where a guard isn't. Yeah. It's a very very similar
thank
thing. And actually,
goodness,
we spoke
I
about
didn't
it
try
because
that.
Well, yeah, because I would have had to have said no, or and I really didn't want. I hate saying no.
Oh, wait, hold on. No, the one I was getting confused with, silent image. I've got first level silent image. That's
great.
The one I was going to try.
There we go.
And
so that's
sorry.
So that's almost again like that. You see that progression. There's something that I allowed Radiant to do, which we've spoken about in the session 0.5, which was not a place to be a rules lawyer.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Which is, Radiant has disguised self, and you fundamentally like altered the complexion of your skin and got rid of your scars, which technically would be alter self, which is a higher level spell. And then after that, you get something called seeming. And like, so they kind of, and then you get polymorph, you know, like, and then you get true polymorph, which is, I think, an eighth or ninth level
and
spell.
And can be permanent.
and can be permanent. And so like, that's where there's like this tiered system of how spells work. It's not as simple as like it evolves too.
Yeah.
But there's kind of built into it. There's these kind of ceilings of ability, and I hate coming up against those ceilings.
Yeah,
I always
yeah,
want
yeah,
a
yeah,
reward.
Yeah.
Like the thing that it's why, although it's not in the rules, like if you get a nat 20 on a perception check and all you can see is that a bear is coming, you're going to get advantage on the next thing you do, because nat 20 is such a precious thing. Like, and in the same way that nat 1 always has to spell disaster of some kind or another, nat 20 always has to be rewarded. And so, you know, I always want a reward.
Yeah. Well, I would have done silent image instead.
So. Silent image totally would have been fine.
But just to kind of show like kind of that feeling of what is a way that I could show the feeling that they had, you know, actually show it. And then, oh God, you keep throwing a little tennis ball up with lines, and I'm like, I know how I want to respond to that. But like,
Because I like say I was like alone or something, and yeah, I was like, Parvis is alone. You is not a, like.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Like, yeah, it's moments really like lovely. That.
So thank you for keep like doing those little things.
No, it's
to,
fun.
Like,
I
mean,
felt bad for Parvis.
Like. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And then when you came back, and Runa, who you guys were all kind of fond of, was like, you said, and like you should, you know, you're lucky we don't throw you from the mountain.
And it is, I just didn't want to say about themself. The reason why I held back on saying about themselves and not finding themselves is because, I mean, I can say it, right? Because we've got, so themselves acted as a spy and then the war was won, but because of the nature of themselves and being a spy, no, there was a lack of trust towards themselves. So as a result, themselves took themselves away, distanced themselves, which is shown in the kobolds, and the kobolds kind of also did the same, and they've
let's look after our own, by everybody else.
Exactly. So as soon as you said we went in there and themselves body wasn't there, my gut just went, oh god, this is just not gonna, yeah, and then coming back into that room and seeing it, just going, but also equally, I mean, what is to say that himself isn't.
Yeah.
You know, there isn't that. And then it wasn't some sort of, well, you know, if we do this and you know, the war is won via these means, then you guys can head off and while their attention is diverted and elsewhere, there can be some workings without even, like, under any scrutiny or under any vision, you know, stuff like that. So it could be themselves that...
In my notes, by the way, I have, other convocation are interrogating Parvis. And then I have a question mark. Perhaps I get drawn into this. As I was going through it, I was like, I think he's going to.
Like a moth to a flame.
And then straight after I said the line, you're nothing but a grain of sand, I went, but I is one of many grains of sand. I was having that, and then I was like, then I was just like, oh God, I should have said, you is one. And grains of sands are many. And I was like, damn it.
It's cool. It also feels like these sort of weird cultural misunderstanding. You know that it's like if a lion could speak, we would not understand it.
Yeah, yeah.
That proverb that even if you're speaking the same language, your frames of reference are so different. And that's what I feel like the position that I was in with Parvis, I hear what you're saying, but I can't.
Yeah.
It's such an opaque thing. I kind of can't see through it or into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean. All those interactions that everybody had were just really, they're just like really rewarding. It's just really exciting, I think, to see everyone having those experiences.
I loved getting to hear more about the tiefling, sort of just, it's just a little bit of a cheeky.
Yeah.
Cheeky
I do want to say, obviously, I am annoyed about my goodies.
Can't do that. There was one in every god had a thing that had just about survived. Just because, you know, I ummed and ahed about it, and then I was like, this is literally where the gods live. If I don't give you magic stuff now, then where? This is where the gods are from, and all the things. So there was things in Nine Towers, but there was nothing in those Nine Towers that's game breaking. Like probably in a way, the most powerful thing is the Ring of.
And I have no idea what to do with that.
So what does it do again?
So it's it has six charges, and you expend one charge to be heard clearly by all creatures within a mile for 1 minute. So like it's basically like a huge megaphone.
I've got a use for that.
Like, is it practical or fun?
Next time, but I'm not going to say it because I don't want to.
Well, you don't know I have it.
Yeah,
that's an excellent point.
That's an even better point.
Mm-hmm. But
you can make creatures who don't speak the same language as you hear you.
Yeah.
As far as you guys are aware, I literally just picked you. Yeah, I didn't tell
you.
The cloak is magic.
Why is he so fashionable?
And now I'm making a dramatic.
Kellis came out in new clothes.
Kellis is already with an AC of 14 and an ability to do basking. He's like, I'll take it.
I'll keep it for myself.
Yeah. The thing is, it just doesn't feel like I would look around for things.
No,
that just doesn't seem like something you would do. If it's not like it's so black and white, like the god was dead. There's nothing else for us here.
Also, technically, you're the only person who already has a magic item.
Yes, that is
like
true.
You already have.
I do have a magic item.
So we decided, Holly and I, that. You talked with the first, and it wasn't something that we'd actually discussed, but it was the very first time in Session Zero when you described your character. You talked about the dagger being special, and I was like, oh, that feels like something really significant. So we won't go into where that dagger came from, but it feels necessary to me and to you that that dagger does things that a regular old sword can't quite do. So it's a magical dagger, and it's a plus one dagger. So plus one to attacks, plus one to damage, and also it can overcome resistances to sort of non-magical bludgeoning, piercing, slashing. So you've kind of got yours in a way.
Yeah, I love so much that you won't, that you do what your character would do, like that you're not just like, yeah, like, and because you're right, and Dalian, it doesn't seem like she would be looking around for stuff. Like, that's not her nature.
What I think she went in there to find was, is the god okay? The god is not okay. Well, then we're done. There's nothing left to do here. Yeah. The problem I came in here to look for or solve has presented itself to me. I have my answer.
Yeah.
But every good role player loots the place before you leave.
Every good metagamer.
Exactly.
I like about everything we've done up to this point, and we even did it in some of the practice sessions, separate. Because I feel like we are not yet a harmonious group.
No, you're not. We had a conversation.
We don't get on. We have very different opinions about what we should do because we are not really a unit. We are we are essentially paid to be here.
We wouldn't
A constructed pop band. You're the Kooks.
That's why I'm really excited about, like, I assume there's a long rest coming. you know, us, like, having a moment after all this shit goes down to actually be like, what are we doing with ourselves? Yeah. And why are we doing it? Like, we need to, like, grow closer as a group, like actually, have these discussions before we go any further.
Maybe we need to have a dinner out somewhere.
Yeah. Team building.
Night on the tower, team building. Yeah.
Well, there's a festival coming up.
Well, Jasmine's down at the festival.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. We're down.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Festival of Benny.
I can't wait to undo
Festy
all the
Ben.
Team.
Festy Ben.
I can't wait to not die, hopefully.
I'm going to imagine that they know that the Festy Benny's probably not going to go ahead. That landslide, I imagine, was probably quite loud.
You're a bloody long way up.
Yeah.
I mean, you're still, I would say...
We've done a couple of days.
I'd say you've done a couple of days. So what essentially we'll do, and I really wanted to avoid it, but I don't think there's kind of much way of doing it. I don't think it's fun to keep you endlessly on the mountain.
Just hobbling along.
So what, you know, I don't think it's particularly spoilers to be like, you know, we've made the point, you're now out of the Blighted Land. The landslide... All the land of the landslide was not blighted, if you like. All
that 400 feet. Yeah, you said it was lush again.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So it's lush again. Yeah. There's only 400 extra feet. Well, it's another probably. I'd say it's another. You're moving quicker than the Antiqua. You can probably get down there in a day and a half. Mm. And yeah, there'll be an opportunity. So essentially, when we come back, this is something we can say when we come back for episode 3 after the long rest. Our heroes will be level 4. You guys are going to level
4. The long rest happens now.
No, The long rest will happen in story.
Yeah.
Okay,
you know, so it'll be when you get a chance to. Because what I don't want to do is go, oh, and you wake up the next morning because you've long rested because it's 8 hours. Yeah. You'd be like, oh, I kind of wanted to have conversations around the campfire that
night.
I kind of want a long rest either till I can figure out why I'm turning into the blight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I feel like I might want to take my medicine first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't wait to undo any team building and bonding that I've had with Radeon simply by putting on the cape. Yeah. Just the goodie that I'm
Well, I don't know. Nelson's got goodies, but I just thought there might be, and there are no goodies for me because I didn't find them.
But weirdly, in the same way that it's quite right that Indelian wouldn't have looked, it feels very right to me that Radian is, even in moments like this, being like, there might be something in this for me. Mm-hmm. You know, there might be something that...
Yeah. And also, as kind of happened thematically, too concentrated on other things to actually notice things that matter.
Mm.
So there's that kind of... doing things with confidence and kind of ballsing it up on many, many occasions.
Yeah.
Which I really like.
Is Morgan just going to hang out with us? Is he going to travel with us?
Morgan's mission was to accompany you for the deference. Morgan's blighted. So, you know, it'll be no surprise that Morgan failed his concert. Can I just give you Morgan's stats, by the way?
Please.
Yeah, Morgan has an AC of 18.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
He rolled that those wolves, because they had advantage... are taking the highest on every roll.
Yeah.
Morgan has the highest AC and he has 27 HP. He is literally the strongest one out of all of you. He has a 16 strength, 13 dex, 14 constitution. He's quite balanced. He's not that. He has a 9 for intelligence and an 11 for wisdom and a 12 for charisma. So he's quite charismatic. But also, he's a paladin and you've been in Blight.
Yeah.
He can lay on hands, he can divine sense, he can divine smite, he can do all this cool stuff. But he was not in a situation, he was more encumbered than all of you by what he...
It showed.
Yeah, it did show. It did show, really bless showed. Him. But,
the dice know. They're telling the story.
Absolutely. They're always telling the story. But yeah, it's he's going to need healing, just like the rest of you.
I can't wait to, yeah.
You've got to be getting pretty squishy because between the narcotic and the, I was going to say, and then the falling boulders, you couldn't have even taken another boulder.
What's your HP? My HP is really low.
Yeah, my HP is like...
Mine's low for me. Before the blade, it was 16.
Mine's decent. Mine's 24.
I'm at 7 HP right now.
I'm at 7. You're at 3. You're at... 24. Or 24.
Yeah. Oh, no, not anymore.
Oh, you
no,
did.
I'm down at...
Well, I wouldn't have used it. Well, no, I had to use the healing spell on Morgan.
I'm low for me at 16.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm like, so I know you've got to be...
We're limping.
I knew that I needed to save that extra bardic inspiration just in case. I went, I can absolutely survive till I'm... I assumed that as soon as I would get out and I was 5 foot away, but I have 3 HP.
Also, you can use you can use bardic on a death save.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just kept it because I went, I might need it, but right now I think getting out and helping you get out was more important than me.
You chose to heal Morgan.
Yeah, I know. But only, like, I hopped over him, if you recall. I wasn't gonna. Yeah.
That is you such a from a turn back.
But like, bye, actually. I could have literally given a potion, I still chose to run. You are on death's door, and instead of healing yourself...
I can't do that. I don't think. Does healing work? Yeah, you can. Oh, yeah. Well, I was safe at that point.
That's true, actually.
And I was like, he could still be useful, so...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know...
Eventually.
He may prove to be...
I would like Morgan to come with us again. I'm going to try and convince him to stay.
Do we... Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that I fully trust Morgan at all, but I feel like he's our contact. Like, if shit went down... He is the only one that can vouch that shit went down the way that it did.
If he was a bodyguard of the Spinner, even just on that one night, you would assume he would have the ear much more than you would.
Mm. Yeah. And also, let's just say, you know, for practical reasons, we did forget about him, but thematically, he wasn't there when we left. Why was he behind us? I know that sounds... just kind of adding in a story thing.
A blubbering mess, wasn't he? Like,
yeah, but he was, like, he was assigned to us, so...
I think I will just retcon that he didn't fight. Well, Didn't need to. I mean, you got it within a round. I just forgot.
He could have been watching from afar, just being like...
I think he was just following Kelnis because, you know, Kelnis is cool and reminded him of his 12-year-old self.
The aspirational tree climber that he used to be.
He was up a tree. He was trying that tree again.
Think about climbing that tree when the landslide started. I thought, I wonder if I should go climb that tree.
That was, again, going to be the thing with the rope was if I was getting desperate, I would have tried to have seen if maybe I could have loosed an arrow with the rope on it
that
to a tree. And
cool.
then that would have been that. But then you threw an umbilical cord at me, so I didn't get a chance. And then it would have been rude to have not accepted. So
it took me hours to paint that rope to look like that.
Anything have stopped it? No,
the landslide. Stop the landslide. Nothing that you can do at this level. You could do like wind wall, maybe, maybe erupting earth. You could
thought about
stone
entangle.
Wall,
I thought because entangle would be
like a net.
I haven't got stats for the. But entangle is not wide enough. So it was a landslide. You know, entangle is only in a certain area. And I would also say that.
That's what I was thinking. Like, if it's just the bit that's coming down towards me.
Yeah, but then all that would happen is if there's a block, it would just go like that, and then it would go round it and over it. There's too much. There's too much mass there.
And ultimately, we were practically out of spell slots. I don't know how you were doing, but
I have two more.
Yeah,
tankness.
Do you know what you didn't do, which I thought you might do?
What?
Wild shape.
Oh yeah.
You could have got a faster speed. You could have turned into a panther. And you could have had like 80 foot dash speed.
A robot could have ridden you down.
Yeah.
On like a battle panther.
I'll tell you what, in the practice, that's what happened.
Oh.
Really?
That's because Sam is a very experienced D&D player and was like, I think he'll wild shape. And I was like, I don't think he'll wild shape.
You knew that for next time, though.
Yeah, but we got a way cooler tying each other together with a rope.
Yeah, you
much
did.
Much cooler
but,
than
but
me
like,
going on a battle
like,
panther.
This is where druids... The more you learn that class, druids are so useful in so many different situations.
Yeah.
And wild shape, I always think wild shape in combat kind of isn't
it's
all
not
it's
great.
Cracked up to be.
Yeah, I think it's
you
the...
can't cast spells in wild shape, but you can maintain concentration on existing spells. So, for example, you could cast Bark Skin on Dolly, and it would probably have to be Dolly. And then you could, on your next turn into like a wolf. And that, as long as you could maintain concentration, that spell would stay up. But you can't then cast any more spells. To me, what wild shape, particularly at low level,
you essentially get extra hit points.
It's really you get some extra HP, but it's great for reconnaissance and it's great for speed because you can turn into a beetle and crawl through a grate and try and listen to something that's happening. But what you, do you know what I mean? Like that's when wild shape comes into its own. And in situations like this, there is the potential for wild shape to be really advantageous. But it feels. This is why I know that you're not a new player, Doug, but you've said to me before, like, oh, I never really worried about the mechanics or how it worked. It was just like a storytelling thing. Mm. I think this is the great thing about playing with players who've either got that experience or like, you know, like Holly, like Ben, like, I mean, Alex, you haven't played that much. Mm. You, as your characters learn what they can do, you're learning what their characters can do. Like, as a level one fighter, you are still more powerful than a member of a kind of town guard. You just are. You're already special. If you're a rogue, you're already the stealthiest person if you took 100 people off the street, you're even at level one, you're better than all of them.
Best in the school.
Best in the school. You're all head boys and girls. but it's, and so I kind of quite like those opportunities that it throws up where it's like, oh, I've got these powers and I'm still learning.
There's also the shock of like everything that just happened.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it wouldn't occur to you.
No. I never think about wild shape though. I've never played a character that can do it.
No. Well, if you've not played a druid, you won't have done it.
Yeah.
It'll come.
It's cool.
It'll come. Yeah, it'll come.
And then I shall ride you into battle.
Yeah.
I look forward to the day that Indelian rides me into battle.
When you turn into a beetle.
And then I can ride you.
Anything else anyone wants to bring up on today's episode of Action Surge?
I just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I just want to play
the next
more
episode can't come soon enough.
Honestly.
I know.
Like, the feeling now of going, right, we've got a little bit of time before, you know.
Yeah.
We film the next.
Yeah, because we record these in batches. And so we recorded episode two today and
tomorrow.
Yesterday.
I just want to play it in tomorrow.
Yeah, so I think we're back in a few weeks.
I had this thought, and I know this isn't really possible, but I had this thought that we could all just book a week. And just
like a D&D holiday.
D&D holiday.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would love to do that at some point. It requires a huge amount of prep for me, and you just wouldn't see. Like, if we booked something and we did it for a week, you wouldn't see me the entire week because it's like originally, I think it's fair to say that originally we were like, oh, you know, maybe we could record loads of episodes in a day. And what it is I was able to go back to the hotel last night and make tiny tweaks to today's session based on things you'd done. So I now go away and I have 2 weeks in which I can shape session three and session four, which are the next ones, obviously, that we'll record, around choices that you guys have made.
Yeah.
Mm.
Whereas if we're trying to do, at one point we talked about trying to do 5 eps across 2 days.
Yeah. People watching at home, that was when we first started talking about this together as a group. Yeah. You have to talk about the cadence of how you're going to make episodes. And we very foolishly said, oh, we'll film 2 episodes a day. Now, assuming they're like 3.5 hours each, that's like 7 hours of playing. And I think we all agreed that that wasn't going to work, which is why we've created the cadence of episodes of Action Surge that we have. And it was really to allow the story episodes to be the best they can be, to give Harry the time to have, even if it's a night off in between.
I can do it. Like, I can turn up with...
Because you're an absolute lad.
Oh, because you're an absolute lad. But I can turn up with, I mean, essentially what I've... So we've played for like 5.5 to 6 hours is about what we've played, which reveals to me that I've prepped about 9 hours, maybe. I've kind of got this stuff for session 3 that's kind of ready that I'll tweak, but broadly speaking, in its biggest brushstrokes, I kind of know where I'm at. Session 4 now is going to, but I'll rework it and it'll be shaped. So if I was going to turn up with 5 3-hour sessions, it's 15 hours. The problem is not can I prep it. The problem is, can the world respond to choices you make? Yeah. I've got to put you on rails at that point. I've got to get to a point where it's like, you can't go there. You need to go this. And you would have been so irritated because you constantly would have been pushed from pillar to post. And if you wanted to investigate somewhere and you wanted to go to a city, I would have had to go and pause and be like, guys, the city is not built. Mm-hmm. And I can riff, like, here's behind the screen. I hadn't, none of those towers were designed. I didn't know if you were going to go in them. So the interior of all those towers and what was inside them is Rift. No, it's not extraordinary world building, but I knew enough about that space to be able to go, oh, I can figure that out and that out and that out. I can't pull a city out of nowhere. I certainly can't pull an encounter out of nowhere that is meaningful, that has kind of peaks and troughs and has story. I couldn't pull the avalanche out of nowhere. No. It's too complicated.
Yeah.
That fight with the wolves is too many moving parts for me to just go. And so it would have been, I think, really frustrating because you would have been stuck. Because I wouldn't have been. It's like building a 5-tier house of cards and then going, I'm going to take that one out of the second tier. It's like, you can't. The whole thing collapses. Mm. And hopefully we're sitting here, obviously, before anything's been released. We had the incredible support on Kickstarter. Mm. We've got our Discord, which is like growing all the time, which is really exciting. And we've got YouTube numbers. And we think we're onto something that we know we're really excited about it. Yeah. We've got enough indications that other people are excited about it. But the dream is that we get to a point where it's viable, that we could play like every couple of weeks.
Yeah.
We could, you know, yeah. We could do one session a week or something like that. You know, like how amazing would that be? Like, because it would also represent that people have loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope.
100%.
Well, if they love it even a fraction as much as I'm loving it right now, then
This is the best thing I ever said yes to. I'm not joking. I almost said no when you sent me that DM because I was so scared of the idea of doing this.
You would never know you were a first time player.
Yeah, no. I was so terrified. I remember looking at my boyfriend after you DM'd me. I was like, A, Ben Staff and Final Fantasy just DM'd me. Just being a Final Fantasy was still super surreal. And then I was like, oh, they've asked me to play D&D. And I was like, and Doug Coggle's going to be in it as well. And I obviously, as a big Witcher fan, I was like, this is ridiculous. And I was like, this is it. I think, babe, I said no to playing D&D with my boyfriend. And all my other friends play D&D together. And they sit in our kitchen and play. And I don't
you can look over their shoulder. You can look over their shoulder and I'll be like, it's not how
I don't like how they the level of how
that's not how you calculate DC.
And I really thought about saying no. And then I said to my boyfriend, was like, look, if you say no now, like, this will never come back around. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, and I was big into, like, this year, I was like, I'm going to start saying yes to things that I was, you know, ordinary I'd run away from. Mm. I wasn't even...
But also, you...
Yeah, I remember when I changed my mind. Yeah.
I remember when we met, it was the first time we'd ever spoken and it was to design your character.
Yeah.
And you were like, I'm really, really worried about role-playing. Yeah. And to me, you are among... you have the clearest character.
Yeah.
You have the, like, the character
that I...
Stuff I
sent Harry is ridiculous.
But I understand, like, I feel like I, as a DM, there's some of your characters I'm still learning how they respond to things. And I'm not in any way saying that Endelion is predictable, but what Endelion is, she's such a vivid colour that's so clear to me, and I feel like I know how to entice her and push her buttons and get reactions out of her. And that's a really exciting thing as a DM when you're like, and I'm sure you'll continue to surprise me, you all will, but it's like going, God, that character's so real to me.
Yeah.
And the fact that you were worried about role-playing is so funny. It's so funny because it feels so natural.
Like, you can imagine being with, like, actors who are multiple award-winning between you, multiple award nominations between you.
Offies.
Aoife is practically a high priestess in our industry. And then there's me.
No.
It's actually
that is almost verbatim what's in that separate group. Yeah. Yeah.
The natural five.
It's called the high priestess and the award winners. Crazy.
And we genuinely cannot picture it without you. That's
no.
I'm, lo- yeah. I'm loving it. Yeah, I'm loving how,
I mean,
how you listen to my...
We wouldn't be here without you. Like, yeah. I'd say the amount
we have
of work
so many team meetings.
When you were there with the Antiqua and the dead god and you were telling everyone what to do, I went, it's like one of our meetings. It's just
there are poetry and brutal efficiency.
It's incredible. I was like, absolutely, go off, Endelion.
Yeah. It's no joke when Morgan was crying, because I've come like a bit of a medical background, and I remember I've been in emergency situation, like I've been in like We're talking massive obstetric hemorrhages, you know, eight, 9 liters of blood are on the floor, you know. And it is just like the moment one person in that team falls apart, the whole thing will come tumbling down. So
and
you
the
just
weird thing
like,
is you're always grateful for that person who takes charge and who says, no, do the, because you almost need that slap in
but
the
that,
face.
But that was, I mean, to kind of go back almost to that whole thing, that was why I found your interaction with Genevieve so interesting, because actually you seem very similar. And it was like the thing that you couldn't abide was that you felt like she was lying to you, and she was, you know, I think you rolled, you know, you felt like she was lying, and not clearly she was lying, she said, I don't see it. But other than that, you two are like on the same page. Like she screams and then she's like, right, don't, we're going to do something about this.
Fight or flight.
She's so close to being a, she's so close to, in a different world, she could almost have been an amazing mentor for Endelion. And yet Endelion doesn't forgive. And therefore that's her card marked as far as she's concerned. And that's a really cool place to be in already.
You said something earlier. You were talking about actually in Action Surge and you said it. You were like, oh, and I have, you know, the best like relationship I have. I used another word, but like, relationship with the dwarven cleric.
Oh, yeah.
And then you were like, so you stealthed him twice.
Yeah.
You didn't go with him.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You
just,
you still, even though you have the best relationship with him, Radiant still didn't follow him because he was Radiant. Worried about him and wanted to be with him. You just, you rolled twice to sneak up on him.
Yeah, because also he doesn't, Radiant has no idea how to interact with people. Yeah. Like that is, as you're seeing, like further and further, he has no idea how to have conversations that mean anything. Like there's this level of social awkwardness that is, that manifests itself often in like huge amounts of confidence, but also not knowing how to approach people. And then just shouts going, it's not your fault. It's like, it's so weird. And I think
it's true. It's like,
no, I wrote it's not your fault. Because I was, I'm gonna talk about it in sort of the diary episode. Yeah. It's like this, the emotional whiplash Radian gives you. You know, he didn't trust you enough to come with you because he was worried about you. He snuck attack you because he thought he might find something or learn something. He wouldn't trust you to tell him the truth. And then when you're crying, this dwarven cleric, you go, it's not your fault. It's so, like, you ping-ponging.
Always. And I maybe that just comes from me figuring out how this character works, but also I think that if you don't have any memory of the person that you were, you are entirely going on instincts.
You're building yourself. Because
he's put himself in harm's way several times to help other people, and I'm still not sure that he trusts any of us. Like,
Also, one of the most meaningful things that happened to him recently, it's so small, is Dolly giving him the
daisy chain.
Because he doesn't get stuff. He doesn't interact with people enough to get stuff from people. And when he does get stuff, it's like, it's the spoons. It's like, you clearly...
He did not consent to those spoons.
I imagine, like he doesn't make a joke. He's probably not very good at telling jokes. Like, there's just lots of things that are broken. And whereas you're incredibly direct, like also I was willing to be very direct in that room and telling everyone what to do in that room, even though it probably wasn't the best thing. But it was like, I don't know. I think maybe this is. He's pretending to be the leader of the group. He has no facility to do that at all. But it's just like, I think there's going to be a lot more push and pull as that goes.
I was really glad Morgan wasn't there for that.
Yeah.
I mean, it made sense that Genevieve would say, like, pick the body up. But I think it would have been messy. And I think we needed that to be a really clean moment.
What I like now is that we've got a choice as a group. Does the web ever learn about what we've learned?
Yeah.
And if Morgan had been there, I feel like that would
have
been...
That's it. Oh, yeah, that's it. There's no way...
I would have highly encouraged you to let him die in the landslide.
Yeah.
And not as a joke.
Yeah.
But now it feels like as a group in that... Not that we hold power, but we at least hold all the cards on who we tell and what we tell. Because the reality is Morgan's there to look after us. He's not one of us, even though we're not really an us yet either. But...
Also, are we going to make the Runa mistake that because Morgan got into all these scrapes, suddenly we like him? Like the Runa giving the speech, and then we actually go, actually, there is a vicious streak there.
He can't be nice. If you're in the web and you work for the web, you can't.
We all work for the web.
You all do.
He's decided to climb the ranks. So to me, that feels like something a lifer would do.
And also that's a question as to if you're offered a promotion in the web, are you able to say no?
Mm-hmm.
but do you know what I mean?
And
I think if I can toot my own horn, that's the great thing about the web as a framing device, because it removes agency. And it removes agency from you guys to an extent, but it also importantly removes agency from pretty much everyone within it. Yeah. There are probably people in the web who joined the web because they were like, I'm angry at the world. And and I'm going to be part of this. And there are others who are like, who've probably done really terrible things because the web have enough on them that they have to.
I even thought about the spinner. When we first met the spinner, I was like, we don't even know that this guy who's like got authority in this moment, and he is in this position, and yeah, he's high up, and but is there even something above him that is controlling, and he's not able to lead him?
Well, the spider prince. There's the spider prince.
What I mean is like, so is he even like, you know...
Is he even acting of his own volition, or is he just being puppeteered?
Yeah.
Is this a god?
Is this a god?
Is it a god?
That's the question you ask everyone. I'd like to roll to see if they're a god.
You've put your dice away. How are you going to...
How are you going to roly-poly?
Oh, roly-poly.
Shall we do a
roly-poly
to finish? Because we've got to come up for an hour. So
we've decided that the percentage dice, we're just going to add that as a number, right? Like if you roll an 80 on your percentage dice, you're going to add an 80.
Okay.
If you roll a double zero, you're adding 100.
Yeah, essentially, no, if you're
If you're a zero and then you roll a one
Yeah, we're going to treat the D10 and the D100 as a combined thing.
Yeah.
So I will talk. So let's do it and let's see what everyone gets.
Oops, sorry.
So for example, Aoife got a 10 and a 4.
Where is it?
So she gets 14 on her percentile dice.
Okay.
Radiant got
a 40.
A 40
and a 7.
So 47.
Okay, so yes. I got
okay. I will allow. So this is where I vamp, isn't it?
Yeah.
What was my favorite thing? My favorite thing.
Ooh.
I was very, very glad that you got to meet Malachine.
Yeah.
I think what I'm learning about Dolly is that she is, to an extent, like, a very typical tiefling. Like, mm-hmm. she's almost a great example.
Mm-hmm.
She embodies a lot of those, and it's because you're playing a bard, but like you embody a load of those virtues that Alakash would have embodied, like your and because Malachine is similar. It feels a little bit like, with some exceptions, I Thelon is dead now. Who, by the way, who did you think you were hearing in the orb?
Oh yeah,
I'm gonna have to re-listen to that conversation between like maybe the most senior of each of
the child might have been Thelon's, to be honest.
Hmm.
What I'll do, by the way, is I'll send you the script of that because I want you to know. I want you to know what it was. But yeah, I don't necessarily like Barabask isn't necessarily indicative of how Thelon held herself, and clearly Parvus is not necessarily indicative of how themself mm-hmm. holds themselves.
And Zephyr didn't for a long time
because they kind of didn't quite see eye to eye in a ways that maybe will be expanded upon at some point.
Eye to eye.
But it feels like what I kind of learned is that Dolly's like a real she's a proper tiefling, and that was just kind of fun for me to learn that. Right. Okay. Roly poly. Let's start with Doug this time.
106.
Whoa! I think we may have a winner already. Holly?
115.
Whoa! How did you roll on your percentile?
90.
No!
And I got a 19.
Wow.
On my d20 as well.
That smile on Doug's face is so
impressive.
I'm so happy for you, Holly.
64.
So say that again.
I said, if you thought that was impressive, please hold on to all of your pants. 64.
64 is really good. It's just over half. Yeah, what Holly rolled.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Oh, go ahead, Alex.
96, and I thought I was really onto something.
I think this is what I got on episode
56.
One.
56.
It's just the rolling. You've rolled.
I think
you
need to go in dice jail.
Yeah, they're going in dice jail.
Someone out there.
Dice, we love them, but they are going in dice jail.
I'm 2 for 2.
2 for 2, but someone out there, please be doing
the cumulative score.
Every single ever action surge.
Yes.
A cumulative score. Yeah.
So I think that's probably where we'll say goodbye for now. Thank you everyone so much for joining us on Action Surge. We will see you soon for episode 3 we will have had showers, we will be in different clothes.
Because none of us have showered.
I insist on having a funk in the room so we can all figure out what the hell Radiant's
mask is. There was a
moment when these guys were blighted. I was thinking, do I just go and then like hear like smell the Radiant's fine. It's like, okay. For those of you who don't understand what Radiant's Musk is, please go and enjoy episode 0.5.
Yes.
Or don't with my double nat ones.
Oh, that's true.
Or if you just
see,
never
if you
see that.
See, if you want to see brilliance and incompetence, go and have a look at episode 0.5.
Yeah.
So we will see you all very soon in the world of Liquid. Thank you so much for joining us. We're Natural Six or something. Bye.
Bye.